All right, everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Free For All here on Thursday nights, Grumblings Media. No place you'd rather be, no other time but now. Of course, I say this with the utmost confidence because, hey, it's our gig. If I'm not going to be confident, who is? Anyway, thanks for joining us, everybody. Grumblingsmedia.com right here on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X, basically anywhere. Great podcasts are to be had. You can find Free For All, our handle, at Grumblings Media, all one word, at Grumblings Media. All right, moving on tonight, we have a great show for you. We're going to cover the Tulsi Gabbard accusations of Obama's treasonous conspiracy. We're going to talk about President Trump. What did he know about Virginia Giuffre? When did he know it? Is it all a distraction from the Epstein files? The whole situation with Gabbard releasing, dropping all these treason accusations, we'll talk about that. And then finally, there seems to be a lot of confusion about what inflation is and how we measure it. And that, given that the president is ramping up his victorious proclamations about his tariffs, it's time we actually looked at the numbers and looked at the definitions. Aiding me in my noble task tonight, as always, none other than Mr. Hody Johns. Hody, how you doing tonight, brother?
Really excited, man. You got to start it good. When people analyze exactly what entertainment is, they're going to start with this show and just be like, that's 100%. How do we measure the level of entertainment on everything else in the world?
So we're setting the bar is what you're saying. All right. And everyone, again, feel free to leave us your questions, comments, feedback. All we ask is keep it relatively clean. We don't care what you ask. Just ask it nicely. We'll put you up on the screen, and we'll try to answer your questions as best you can. Also, if you feel like just saying how handsome a devil Hody is, we'll take compliments, too. We'll accept those. That's fine. All right. Hody, the first thing I want to talk about is, as we mentioned, the Tulsi Gabbard announcement late last week. I think it's about 7 days. It was last Thursday, where she announced, hey, I've declassified stuff, and guess what? I've now come to the conclusion that former President Obama and his minions in his administration are guilty of a treasonous conspiracy. Treasonous conspiracy. So when we talk about something like this, and listen, I've done some research on this. Catch this week's Liberty Lens. Mike Termod and I went into it. But I also want to go into here when we have a little bit of audience interaction, viewer interaction there, Hodster. I know you spent a lot of time looking at all the stuff that was released. We don't need to go into every single document in detail. But I'm going to summarize, and listen, jump in at any time, because I want to get your feedback on this, and then we'll chop up some of the issues here and see if we can arrive at our own opinions, whether the Obama administration parlayed itself with the deep state and it committed treasonous acts, the whole Russiagate thing. Okay. So let me give you the quick paragraph. Hey, I wrote it up. I might as well read it, right, Hody? Last week, Tulsi Gabbard, serving as the Director of National Intelligence, announced the declassification and release over 100 documents, which she claimed provided overwhelming evidence of a treasonous conspiracy orchestrated by former President Barack Obama and key members of his administration, including John Brennan, the former CIA director, James Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, and James Comey, the former FBI director. Gabbard alleged that these officials manipulated intelligence to fabricate a narrative of Russian interference in the 2016 election with the intent to undermine Donald Trump's campaign and presidency. She stated that this conspiracy constituted a years-long coup and announced that she was referring the matter to DOJ for potential criminal prosecution. Now, let's also say this, Hody. She claims that she's declassified certain documents. Fair enough. But let's also review what has been the, quote, official narrative. We're libertarians. We're allowed to look at the official narrative and prejudge it as being BS, right? That's what libertarians do. So let's look at the stuff so far. You had the Mueller investigation in 2019. We all heard about that. I'll skip to the findings, which were the report aligned with the intelligence community's assessment that Russia aimed to help Trump and harm Clinton, focusing on influence rather than vote tampering. So they never came to the conclusion that the Russians had hacked into voting machines, for example, or intimidated voters. Basically, they were involved in a social media campaign largely across all platforms for disinformation, just to sow confusion and discord in the American public's mind. That's very important, by the way. The Senate Intelligence Committee report in 2020. This was a bipartisan 3-year investigation by the Senate Intelligence Committee, producing a comprehensive 1,300-page report, emphasizing 3-year investigation bipartisan. The results of this, the report directly contradicted Gabbard's claim of a fabricated narrative, emphasizing the consistency of the intelligence findings that were unearthed during the Mueller report. The Durham investigation in 2023, Special Counsel John Durham investigated the origins and conduct of the FBI's Russia probe, codenamed Crossfire Hurricane. The results of that, while critical of procedural issues, Durham's findings also do not support Gabbard's allegations of a treasonous conspiracy, so they just found problems with the way things were done, but not the conclusions of the assessments. And then finally, there's the House Intelligence Committee report, which was done in 2020 and declassified this year. This was a Republican-led report, declassified by Gabbard last week, and which assessed the intelligence community's conclusions on Russian interference. Its results, the report aligns with some of Gabbard's criticisms. Obviously, it was a partisan report, but stopped short of alleging a conspiracy or invalidating the interference narrative. So, again, these past reports, Hody, all kind of have the same basic premise. The basic premise is the Russians did mess around during the 2016 election cycle. The messing around, the interference, took the form of misinformation, social media sowing discord, and there was no evidence of direct vote tampering, and there was no direct evidence of, to be fair, President Trump lining up with the Russians, asking for direct help, and it doesn't seem like the Clinton campaign did anything of the same. So, having said all this, Hody, I know you took some time the last week to look at these documents. What's your general takeaway? Do you kind of agree with all the prior assessments and the conclusions that I just ran off here?
Yeah, the general assessments are really pretty accurate. What we have here, it's over 600 pages worth of evidence if we're reading the Mueller report. But the Mueller report is like 448 of those 600 pages. So it's a good one. For those who haven't read the Mueller report, it is actually one of the most interesting declassified documents that you will read because it reads like a spy thriller. It really is dramatic, right? And not in the fictionalized sense, but you get to see how hacker groups work. This hacker group, codenamed, I think nicknamed Fancy Bear. In Russia, you know, hacked into the DNC, released most of the information through Guccifer, the account, and through the WikiLeaks articles, of course.
Right.
I want to be clear that a lot of what got released was really important for us to know. When Democrats are being corrupt, people have a right to know. These people are our governing authorities, and we deserve to know those things. That said, Putin said very blatantly when asked, did you want Trump to win the election? He said yes. You know, so there was a reason for all this. Now, if you're wondering, there's a couple things to clear up. One is what's the deal with any disagreement? I hear there's disagreement. What's the deal with that? Well, the disagreement is the level of confidence at which Putin himself told this hacker group to operate. Now, all of them believed that he did, but some of them felt the evidence was conclusive based on the money they were getting through government agencies that were state-funded. There were actually three Russian corporations that were, indicted by the Mueller report based on the findings in the Mueller report, and that's how they were getting their funding. And, of course, Russia gave them the money to give them the money. And so they were debating on what level of confidence that meant Putin was involved, either very high or very low. But nobody disagreed that Russia was doing it. Nobody disagreed with why. It's funny that Gabbard names Comey as one of the co-conspirators. He's actually the one in the email chain who was like, I think we should downgrade our confidence from high to low when we make this conclusion. And the reason he actually removed his name from the Mueller report. So it's funny that, of course, Trump had a falling out with Comey, as we all know. But Comey was actually the one standing up for him in the investigation.
That's a great point, Hody. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's a great point because the reason I think it's a great point, and I think it's something to bear in mind as we progress through our conversation here, is keep in mind the political posturing here, the political positioning of the current Trump administration and what they want to accomplish with these claims, with these discoveries, with these declassification drops, right? Because I think when we get to wrap this up, we have to put a pin in it for now and then do a call back to it, because I think it's very important to keep that in mind. So having said what you said, the other thing I've heard is that there's these so-called whistleblowers, I'm using quotes, mm-hmm. that Gabbard refers to that said, hey, we told them this was BS. We told them this was nonsense. And I think a lot of people, tell me if you agree with this, may lose track of what happens in these meetings and what happens when you put a group of people to provide you opinions. Not everyone, it's rare that everyone in a room agrees with each other, and it's very common, even when things turn out perfectly to plan, that you've had people disagree. If you've worked for government, if you've worked in large corporations, you know, this is the classic staff meeting. This is the classic brainstorming session, right? You'll get 20, 30 people in a room. It is super rare, especially if they're accomplished people. They're not underlings. They're people of some authority within the organization. They feel free to speak their minds. You're going to get disagreements, just like, hey, so yes, there may have been one or two folks whose emails may be, hey, I think we're on the wrong track here. But they may have been 2 of 30, 2 of 40, 2 of 50, 2 of 20. So keep that in mind. Don't just assume that because there was one email with a dissenting opinion that it was the only one they should have looked at and that it was summarily dismissed, right?
Yeah, so let's talk about that whistleblower for just a second, because I think, unfortunately, that's something we can outright dismiss from Gabbard as like kind of an abject lie. The whistleblower, I'm going to go ahead and quote what she says the whistleblower says. We don't have this document anywhere. This is what she said. You know what? I'll even take her word for it.
Sure.
I shouldn't, based on her history, but let's do it. The assertion was in contradiction to what the National Intelligence Officer for Cyber Issues had previously implied. And at no time during the prior 3 years had any of the National Intelligence Council staff members suggested to me that the IC viewed the Steele dossier material as credible. Okay, so the issue with the whistleblower is that they're saying that they objected to the ICA because the Steele dossier was included within the ICA. Let's go ahead and now go to the ICA, the Mueller report, and quote that, what they actually said about the Steele dossier within the Mueller report itself. This is a quote directly from it. Several days later, BuzzFeed published unverified allegations compiled by former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele during the campaign about candidate Trump's Russia connections regarding the Steele dossier. The Mueller itself report says that the Steele dossier is not credible. And so the problem with this whistleblower, if they are whistleblowing, they're illiterate. They didn't read what the Steele dossier says. Yeah, you can't, or the ICA says that Steele dossier is not credible. And so they're saying, I can't believe it was included in there. And it's like, well, they included it to say it wasn't credible.
Right.
And so Gabbard's intentionally trying to create a narrative here that is untrue. It's a fictional narrative.
Right. So even if you believe her account that there exists a whistleblower and they wrote this to in hindsight give it credibility now is a bit disingenuous, right? And as a bit of an evidence check, both the Senate report and the Mueller report, as you stated, established that the Russia probe began not with the Steele dossier, but with information about Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos, a fellow Greek-American with an equally long surname, just like me, that it began with when they began looking into his dealings, not the dossier. So for people who are jumping on this, if you're a MAGA supporter and you're like, hey, haha, Tulsi, evidence, treason, Obama, whatever, whatever, keep in mind, the Steele dossier is just being thrown out there because you've heard of it, right? It's salacious. We've already known it's BS. So, you know, the attempt by Gabbard to say, well, these dudes relied on the Steele dossier to investigate Trump. Therefore, any conclusion out of those investigations must be BS because it originated with BS. Well, there's two things wrong with that, Hody. One, that's not why the investigation started, right? There's two reports more contemporary to the activity that said, no, it started with looking into Papadopoulos' dealings. And secondly, think about your life. How many times have you started off of bad information, but you still have to do the due diligence, right? Think of it as a stock tip, right? If someone came to me back in my Wall Street days and said, hey, man, here's this great little stock. It's called Silverline Games. It's going to go through the roof. I have no stake in it, but I'm telling you, man, 300% gains in 3 months. And I go and I research it and I research the gaming industry, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden I say, well, that was nonsense what the guy told me. But here's this other great stock I found. Here's this stock called, Ubisoft. And I'm going to invest in it because I just, you know, in the course of my debunking the first tip, I found this other great stock. Does that mean that anything I earn from the stock is nonsense because it originated with a bad tip? Not necessarily, right? So we have to keep things balanced here. So on that point, and I have to be honest with you, I'm a little disappointed in Gabbard because this is clearly, she just threw that out there because it sounds juicy. And if you're only dealing in 10-second sound bites, you hear Steele dossier, Obama treason, right? And it kind of flows nicely. So, I'm glad we could talk about that. Now, let me jump on something else, right? When we say treason, now, to me, Hody, tell me what you think about this. It's very interesting that it was not, we're going to refer Obama, Comey, Clapper, Brennan. We're not going to refer them to DOJ for legal action. We're not going to refer them for anything, any particular violation of any particular penal code or anything. We are referring them for treason. That is a very specific charge. And as my co-host and friend Mike Tremont pointed out earlier this week, treason is possibly the only crime that's enumerated in the Constitution. The Constitution describes what's required for treason. There's a reason for that, because of our history, right? Prior to the formation of the United States, any contemplation of anything that went against the king's narrative was treason, and you could be executed for treason. So there's very specific levels for treason. You got to provide aid and comfort to the enemy of the United States, typically interpreted as a wartime activity, typically, but not always. Secondly, there must be two eyewitnesses who come forward and testify that they witnessed this treason. Second, actual material benefit has to be provided to an enemy. And it's almost impossible to get to get treason through, right? Because, very specifically, thanks to Donald Trump suing a Supreme Court case last year, we know there's almost absolute immunity for any official act. And clearly, ordering an investigation, Hody, into potential Russia interference would fall within the official acts of all these individuals, right? They didn't run off, doing something for their personal lives, right? It wasn't to enrich themselves personally. These were official acts. So we know, thanks to President Trump, they can't get them by and large. They can't get them on any statutory issues. They have immunity for that, Hody. But knowing that treason is such a high bar, why do you think Tulsi Gabbard keeps mentioning the word treason. Why has President Trump himself retweeted memes calling for the arrest of President Obama on charges of treason? Why do you think specifically they've picked treason?
It's sensational, and I think it is something that ignites within us something really serious, right?
Right.
That something, I mean, when they called the J6ers saying that they committed treason, right? Like, that riled a lot of people up. People to this day on the left still like, wow, these are traitors, right? These are people that tried to commit treason. And it gives people a lot of anger. Now, as you've kind of alluded to here, and I'll just go ahead and spell it out.
Sure.
Convicting someone of treason is, you've actually got to really, really try to get assist a foreign power in an act of war to take over the capital of the United States of America. And like, Gabbard said she has overwhelming evidence that she's got treason. We have examples of people conspiring with spies that weren't convicted of treason.
Aaron Burr, famously.
Right. Like, we have people that have done so much more than what Obama did and did not meet that threshold. So really,
right. This
is why is it, and why be sensationalist? I think that answers itself. He's trying to take away from something we're going to discuss here in a minute, but the Epstein stuff. And so I think having that high charge, if he said Obama littered and just went on that, people are just going to kind of be like, whatever, right? Like, I don't care. But saying that it's treason, he knows that his hook and line dyed-in-the-wool followers are going to repeat this talking point, and treason is against the United States, to them, could be even more important than catching pedophiles. So, you know, like that could actually be something that throws them off the trail.
I personally think there's truth to that. But here's another theory I've been floating around. You tell me, right? We know that the president is given to exaggeration. I'm being very kind. You know, if something's 10x, he'll say it was 50x, right? If he cut a $100 deal, he'll tell you he cut a $1,000 deal. Like, it's typical of him, right?
Yeah.
We know that when it came to the Epstein files, he said, hey, I just told Pam Bondi to go ahead and go ask to release the grand jury transcripts. I want her to release everything. And then Pam Bondi goes to the judge. Judge says, no can do. We're not in the business of unsealing those transcripts. Ah, you see, she was an Obama judge, and she's trying to keep the truth from you. Well, what most people who don't pay attention to this stuff don't realize is grand jury testimony is almost never in the history of jurisprudence of the United States is ever accomplished. There's a reason it stays sealed, right? It's very easy to get a grand jury indictment. Famously, New York DA once said, I can indict a ham sandwich for murder if I wanted to, right? But it was a calculated PR move, right? They knew they weren't going to get it released, but because they sent it to an Obama-appointed judge, they could then reap the benefits of the PR. Man, it was an Obama judge that said no. She must be protecting Bill Clinton, right? That's the spin you get. Do you think, Hody, that they know that someone told Tulsi Gabbard, refer it for treason, call it treason, always use the word treason, because when we send it off, we know you're not going to get it. We know it's a failure. But if we're lucky, we'll catch another Obama appointee and then further that it's a conspiracy to treason, because not only did Obama commit the treason in this act, the treasonous conspiracy, his judges are getting him off the hook. So why don't we just get rid of these activist judges now? It's the same playbook as the immigration playbook, wouldn't you say? Or do you think I'm being too conspiratorial when I say something like that?
No, I mean, you're just – in fact, you're being kind of anti-conspiratorial, right? You're kind of putting a stop to whatever the thought process that the conspiracy theorists might have at this point about what Trump – what Obama may have done. And listen, I just want to say – Obama ordered the drone strike on an American journalist. He kind of popularized the ability to commit wars or I'm sorry, kinetic military actions
right.
without, you know, seeking, without seeking approval. While Trump certainly defeated his number of innocent people killed with drone strikes, Obama really took it off compared to where like George W. Bush even was before him. So really escalated the number of innocent people that we killed overseas. There is no defense from either you or me.
For Obama.
For Obama, right? Like, if he committed treason, fantastic, right? Like, you and I, it's not one of those things that I'm like, I'm trying to defend the guy because I like him.
Were you border disappointed that there wasn't anything new in Gabbard's revelations? Like, were you hoping to find some evidence of treasonous conspiracy holding? And I don't mean that as a put down. I mean that as, sure. Listen, if you go on libertarian Twitter, right?
Yeah.
There's lots of people who look forward to this stuff because they're, you know, like most libertarians, like most, I think, people in the U.S. these days, you just assume your government is up to no good, yeah. right? You just assume they're up to no good.
Safe assumption.
Right? But the truth of the matter is we can't just take that assumption and make it a confirmation bias. And in this particular case, like, look, if you want to put Obama on trial, like you said, for droning innocent civilians, fair enough. Let's get him on that. Let's get him on that. You and I would probably be at the front of the pack with the pitchforks and the torches on that one. But for this one, not only is it patently false. Now, listen, maybe Gabbard, like today she was buzzing about something that she's going to declassify more stuff. Nothing came out today as far as I could tell, but she's been buzzing about it. And then all of a sudden, Kash Patel, all of a sudden, finds burn bags in one of the FBI buildings. Now, of course, he says, I found these burn bags with papers in them. Of course, there's no context to do these always exist? Do you always have stuff ready to be destroyed? You know, I mean, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying the timing is really weird. B, we've kind of heard this before, Hody, about documents hiding under somebody's desk. I seem to recall the Epstein files were being locked in a safe by the the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, and Pam Blondie sent Kash Patel and Dan Bonino, the two podcast swindlers that they were, right away to get those files and bring them back. That was in March. We're still waiting for them. Now we're told there were no files. And a U.S. attorney lost his job because of it, right? So forgive me, at least, until I see what's in those bags, that I'm not taking this with that. I'm taking it all with a grain of salt. So why is it important, Hody, that we anti-deep state libertarians, why is it important that we draw the line, look at this with a critical eye, and say, hey, man, as much as we'd like to get Obama and Comey and Clapper and Brennan, not on this.
Yeah, I mean, the first people this would be used against would be libertarians, right?
Oh, like, of course.
And so, like, really, that's the easiest answer is when you allow the government to make up a fabrication against people that you don't like, then they have the power to use that same power that you just gave them against people that you do like. I like what Aaron says here. Hank, don't do it. Don't give Ubisoft money. Don't do it, Hank. Yeah, that would have been
nice callback there, Aaron. Nice callback.
A little bit of a mistake.
Yeah, you're right. Like, it's important that if you're going to look, while we're out to eliminate this type of opaqueness, we want full transparency as libertarians, as Americans. You got to do it the right way. You know, just like we say, there's got to be due process. Even if someone is guilty of a crime, there's got to be due process.
Yep.
Because it's important to follow due process and give due process. Same thing here. Be critical. Ask yourself, is there a particular reason that Tulsi Gabbard is dropping this news? Well, listen, before we go there, let me ask you this, Hody. When the Trump administration was being filled out, he was nominating his cabinet appointees. We had some people we were like okay with. Some folks we said, look, this Hegseth character just seems like a moron. He's just, you know, drinking McDrunk and boy, are we putting him in charge of our armed forces type of thing. And I think he's pretty much proven that so far, in my opinion. But when it came to Gabbard, especially in libertarian circles, you're like, wait a second, this might have been a good one. Because she's expressed concern. She comes from the other side of the aisle. She's not a spy, et cetera, et cetera. I had reservations at the time, to be honest, not because I thought she was not sincere in what she said she wanted to do, but I was cautious because I felt you're putting someone in a job they've never done before at any level. You're having her lead up this agency. I thought she was ripe for manipulation. I thought she was ripe for manipulation, not for nefarious purposes, but just sort of like she'd be a puppet at these lifelong technocrats, these lifelong spies, these lifelong analysts who are there apolitically, right? They're neither Republican nor Democrat. They've just worked there for the last 25 years, like typical government bureaucrats, right? But do you feel that's the case now? Or do you feel that she learned her lesson when she contradicted Trump on Iran? And Trump basically said, ignore her. Tell her to shut up and ignore her, right? When someone brought that up to him in the press conference, said, well, whatever information Gabbard has, she's wrong.
Yeah.
That was to forgive my Bronx phrasing here, she got bitch slapped on that one, right? So do you think this is – if you want to be part of this administration, Tulsi, you'll just do what we tell you, and we're telling you there was a treasonous conspiracy led by Obama. Do you think it's a case of that right now?
Yeah, there's a few things. Gabbard had two major upsides. One is that she was opposed to the war in Ukraine, and the other is that she had called out other Democrats pretty viciously when she was a Democrat in the primaries. And so for that reason, people gave her a lot of trust. And then when she switched right. over to being a Republican, you know, people are kind of like, oh, okay, she's seen the worst of the evils of the Democrat Party. Maybe she'll do good for the Republican Party. Now, having two areas of overlap with somebody is not quite enough to dub them like a liberty lover, but unfortunately many libertarians did it.
Right.
Ignoring Gabbard's kind of illustrious history of being a Kremlin asset, and this is not something – she's been featured on Vatnik Soup. She's got hundreds of instances of her praising and backing Putin and trying to stick up for what he's doing. This was known – well before her appointment. And right. so I'm going to go ahead and say, while I don't believe you're wrong, that this is one way she's thinking, hey, how can I make it up to Donald Trump? Oh, this could be it. That we can't ignore the other asset. This fulfills another one of her goals, which is trying to get Russia off the hook. She's juxtaposing everything to make it look like Russia did absolutely nothing wrong. Like the way she phrased her report is not just that Russia didn't do the election hacking, which is what she's trying to make it sound like Obama's alleging. But right. she's quoting exclusively things that say Russia didn't interfere with the election machines, and then right. pointing, but Obama said Russia interfered with tried to influence our election. And so she's saying that statement is untrue, that Obama committed a coup by saying Russia influenced that election. Now, this is obviously, like, magnitudes of preposterousness, because if this is true, then Trump has committed treason against Trump, because Trump has said this as well. In fact, hang on, I've got a great quote here from Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Let me find it. Sure. Who says, as the president has said many times and stated over and over again, as have I, as have a number of other administration officials, we maintain that Russia interfered in the elections. If that statement is something that she is calling a coup, then Donald Trump has committed a coup against Donald Trump as well.
Right.
And like that, obviously, like the absurdity is one thing, but we have to realize, I think you're asking the right question here. Why be this absurd? Now, the Epstein right. thing is obviously one example, but we can't forget the other incentive that she has here, right? She is a Vatnik. And right. so as like a Soviet apologist, this is somebody who she's like, I can make Russia look good. In fact, I may be able to frame this so that MAGA believes truly that Putin never tried to influence our elections, that Russia never tried to influence the election, which is, of course, untrue, but it's what she's doing.
And again, I think there's also the subtlety, before we move on, that the prior reports and assessments made it very clear. The Russians did not directly affect the election, meaning they didn't flip votes, they didn't hack machines, mm-hmm. voter intimidation, nothing like that. It took the form of misinformation leading up to the election, right? And compromise and you know, stuff like that. But in terms, right? So, and I think Gabbard is not as careful with her language, right? She's implying like the Russian, we knew the Russians never hacked any machines. We know the Russians didn't flip any totals. Nobody ever claimed that they did. See, she's creating a problem. She's creating a false narrative and then giving you proof as to why it can't be true. Well, we know it's not true because you just made it up. Okay. In the interest of keeping things tight, hey, listen, everybody out there, I know there's a lot of you watching us right now. Feel free to drop some questions, comments, or suggestions. We'd love to hear them. Anything you want to ask us about the Gabbard, if you think we've missed something glaringly obvious, please. We want to hear from you. We want to know what we missed, if we missed anything. Or tell us why you think we might be right. But moving on to the second topic of the show, why is the timing of the Gabbard announcement, and now we're seeing things like, hey, these FBI burn bags that Patel just announced, right, and all these things, really, and it's sort of working, Hody, because MAGA Twitter right now isn't complaining about Epstein as much. They're looking at the jangling shiny keys up in the corner, Hody, at this Russiagate thing. But the Epstein file, is still the elephant in the room. It's still the elephant in the room, and we still have to point out, still no names released, still nothing as to who Maxwell was trafficking to outside of Epstein. Why is she in jail if there's no list, et cetera, et cetera. Still no justice for his victims. One of his victims was Virginia Giuffre. Now, Ms. Giuffre committed suicide, I think, in April of 2025. The severity of everything that happened to her at Epstein's hands probably just got to her. However, in a very interesting sort of, I don't know if it was a faux pas, I don't know if it was a Freudian slip, I don't know what it was, but President Trump was asked on his way back from Scotland, he was asked on Air Force One by the pool reporters. So for the most part, these are all reporters friendly to the president because he screened out the guys who would give him and the gals who would give him any trouble, right? There was this innocent question about Giuffre. Listen to what Trump said. I have the quote in front of me, so forgive me if I look down here. Trump said, let me back up. A reporter asked Trump if Giuffre was one of the employees poached by Epstein in 2004. Trump said, quote, I don't know. I think she worked at the spa. I think so. I think that was one of the people. Yeah. He stole her. And by the way, she had no complaints about us, as you know, none whatsoever. Right? Then he elaborated. People were taken out of the spa, hired by him. In other words, gone. And then when I heard about it, I told him, listen, we don't want you taking our people, whether it was spa or not spa. I don't want him taking people. And he was fine. And then not too long after that, he did it again. And I said, out of here. That seems to me to be a very strange reaction. And I talk with this on Liberty Lens with Mike Tremont. That seems to be a very strange reaction for a former employee who was your employee as a locker room attendant at your spa at the age of 16. Very strange. Now, give the president the benefit of the doubt. He probably didn't hire Giuffre directly. He was probably hired by whoever, by the Mar-a-Lago manager. Give him the benefit of the doubt. I have no doubt that he didn't hire her directly. Are billionaires, Hody, typically in the practice of stealing locker room attendants from one another?
Would that you say? Seems a little odd.
Yeah. Right? And if one of the billionaires that stole one of these employees from your employ was Jeffrey Epstein, and one of the employees they stole was a 16-year-old girl who ended up being sex trafficked by Epstein, and ended up committing suicide just about 3 months ago, Hody, would your reaction be more, oh my God, he did take her and she did end up killing herself over this. Oh my God. Mike and I mentioned this. We've mentored plenty of kids in our days in our corporate experience, right? Or in his case, in government experience. Mike shared, you know, you catch Liberty Lens, towards the end, you'll see Mike shared a story. One of his interns was up at Cantor Fitzgerald on 9/11, was killed. And it says it haunts him to this day. That, you know, one of his interns was killed on 9/11. Wouldn't you think a typical human response would have been like, she worked for me. Even though I didn't hire her, I really didn't interact with her. What a shame. What happened at the hands of that animal, that scumbag of a human being. Instead, the president made it a point of saying, people love my spa. It's the best spa in the world. Nobody had any complaints about the spa. And by the way, she cleared us because Giuffre never made any accusations against Trump, right? Do you find that a weird reaction, Hody?
Yeah, and it's the tip. What's funny is this is one instance where the defense of Trump is that he's lying, because you have to hope that he's just using some bravado, right? That he's saying like, oh yeah, I remember our employees, and while I'm not saying what a shame, like look what an amazing job I did firing, you know, or I guess banning him from the club because I knew he was such a creep after stealing our employees. But this creates, and I don't know if you want to do this or you want me to do it, but the timeline now is all busted.
Yeah.
Trump is indeed lying about something, but it's not – unfortunately, the lies that he has opened himself up to telling now are of the more insidious kind, because right. The problem is that she was not – Epstein wasn't barred from the club until 7 years after he's apparently poached this employee for sex trafficking. And Trump said specifically it was not long after that, right? That was in the quote you just read that he got rid of Epstein. By the way, those doing the math, that is 1 year after Epstein was convicted of prostitution. So it's like the timeline does not at all match up. Trump, of course, barred him after the court case, right? Did not bar him before he was convicted in a criminal court of law. Say what you will about that, but now Trump is saying he fired him because he was taking their employees and sex trafficking them. And then that opens up, oh, so you knew he was sex trafficking them. You knew he was taking your employees in order to do this. And all of a sudden, like Trump, by saying this, has opened up a million more questions, and he was hoping to, you know, like you said, it was a simple question. If he answered honestly, as you said, if he just said, man, I didn't know, what a shame, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And still now, and now we actually get to say like, oh, so you knew Epstein was trafficking people.
And this is one of those times, Hody, where the horror of what's implied by Trump's statements makes it almost embarrassing on my part to say, hey, man, why don't you just shut the F up? Don't you have any lawyers around you? Don't you have any PR people around you? Are you too stupid to listen to them? Keep your pie hole shut. This is not a question you want to elaborate on and make yourself look smart on. Like, hey, do you remember Virginia Giuffre? I know she worked at my club, but honestly, I never interacted with her. I didn't hire her directly. I know she worked for us. I know she was an Epstein victim. I'm terribly sorry. My heart goes out to her family. I know she committed suicide or she passed away in April. My heart goes out to the family and the rest of the victims. That's the correct answer. Even if you're faking it, Hody, that's the correct answer, right? And if you can't bring yourself up to fake that sort of sincerity, shut the F up. Like if I'm his lawyer and he's on the stand, I'd be pulling my hair out. What's left of it? I'd be pulling it out because I'd be like, You're just convicting yourself at this point. Shut up. But unfortunately, I see this as one of two options. Either the president was complicit in the Epstein nonsense somehow. That's one option. The other option is he just can't keep from lying. He's just a born liar. He can't – he couldn't tell you the truth if he tried. Or third, he's finally gone as senile as Joe Biden. There is no other option other than those three, in my opinion, Hody, and none of them are good. Like, I know I see a lot of MAGA supporters, a lot of Trump supporters say, hey, there you go. The guy told you he banned them. And they stop right there. The president said he banned them after that. But like you said, the timeline contradicts the timelines. And just for Trump's claim is that he banned Epstein in 2004 for poaching his employees. However, Mar-a-Lago's membership rolls have Epstein on the books until October 2007, which was after his 2006 arrest for soliciting prostitution. And it was something like in 2000 where Trump – or 2002 rather, where Trump said, I like Jeff Epstein. He likes beautiful girls as young as 16 the same way I do, right? Or something like – or a bit on the young side, something I'm paraphrasing. So the president, when he made that quote, I think it took a lot – it stunned a lot of people who are aware of the timelines. And I don't know, Hody. I mean, look, so far the president's been Teflon on this. Like, I have to admit, I'm shocked at how much MAGA is willing to give him enough rope on this one, to be honest with you. I don't understand how this is still a matter of, you know, the libtards are framing him somehow when he himself is contradicting himself right now.
Yeah, and that last one you said I think is just really – again, damning that he provided that famous quote about Epstein, how of a great guy he is, and he likes those young girls, and I love that about him, appears after Trump already said he was aware that he was taking his young girls, right? Like, and yeah. So, like, it's just like I said, the defense needs to be that he's a liar, right? Like, that's what they are hoping. Otherwise,
or
he's senile and evil, right?
Like, yeah, or senile. The best outcome, if you're the little blonde girl who does all the press conferences for the president, thing you could say now is you can't say he was misquoted because it's on tape. it's on video. So you can't say he was misquoted. The best thing you can stand there and try to sell the public is – he had a senior moment. Literally, that's the kindest thing you could say. But after all the grief they've given, and deservedly, they gave Biden over his cognitive decline, is that something you want to bring up for President Trump right now?
Yeah, I think if you are going to attempt to preserve Trump's legacy, much like they did with Biden, you realize they should have admitted his senility like way earlier than they did, right. And now MAGA finds themselves in the same situation. Do you want to preserve Trump's legacy by admitting his senility, or are you willing to just be like, yeah, maybe he's a pedo, but he goes against other pedos that we hate worse or something like that? Like, it's just – this is a really and of course, this poor girl obviously was one of the few – there were over 1,000 victims, according to Trump's own FBI, over 1,000 victims that they had videos and images of being taken advantage of, and that all underage, and only 300 have chosen to publicly identify themselves. And she was one of the few, you know, who was brave enough to do it and had to withstand, obviously, if you've seen any of her public profiles, and withstood a lot of hatred from MAGA, a lot of bullying, and... you know, this poor girl ended up killing themselves. And like, this is, I think as libertarians, we talk about policy and philosophy a lot.
Yes.
But morality, I tend to find that is the defining trait of libertarians, is there's something we can't swallow our morality, and so we can't join the other two parties. And so this is one of those things that makes us libertarians, is to just say, oh, it's some girl who, you know, oh, Obama just blew up a journalist. Oh, that's price of politics. Oh, right. Trump just, you know, Trump and his MAGA people bullied somebody into suicide. Well, it's just whatever. We're not willing to pay that price. You know, it's too much. And I think while you say you're surprised that a lot of MAGA, and I'll give it to you, I'm surprised how much of MAGA is still with him. I will say losing Matt Walsh, pretty big deal. He didn't lose Elon Musk over the Epstein stuff. He lost it over not giving subsidies to his company. But, you know, losing Elon Musk, pretty big deal. you had a couple of those podcasters that were like, oh, are we the dummies now? A lot of the podcasters, a lot of the influencers are jumping off the train. It, of course, it's not going to be a majority, right? But when we look at elections that get decided by 4%, 6%, 8%,
right,
you know, 1%, 2%, when we can say, hey, it's not as much a MAGA as it should be, but 10% of them are, have had the veil lifted over their eyes, that's big. So I will say
it's something. It's something, and but you know what the sad part is? There's no opposition party or parties to take advantage of this. The Democrats are hopelessly tripping over their own feet.
Oh, yeah.
The Libertarians are still trying to get their former chair on charges of embezzlement. So we're not doing much better either. We're still arguing amongst ourselves. And that's what I'm afraid of. Yeah, he'll lose some of the hardcore people. But at the end of the day, where else are they going to go? It's a sad political reality. I'm not talking about ideological reality, but as a political reality, he may skate. What, now, I'll say this before we go on to the next topic real quick. Whether there's somebody else other than Trump who has that Teflon Don sort of John Gotti Teflon sort of thing, you know, I don't know if that's the case. Like, I don't see Vance having that Teflon that Trump inexplicably has, but we'll see, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Okay. Last subject of the night. And again, if you have any questions, please feel free to hit us up in the chat. Always willing to hear from our viewers and our listeners. Hody, if you've been paying attention to anything besides the topics we just described, it's how much we're winning these days. President Trump is scoring deal after deal after deal that, you know, punishing the rest of the world for daring to sell in America without paying a toll, without paying a tariff, and we're winning. And all those economists, whether it was Adam Smith, Milton Friedman, Thomas Sowell, Hayek, Rothbard, basically everybody but Marx, they're all wrong about tariffs. Trump proved them wrong because these tariffs have had zero effect, right? And Jerome Powell's an idiot for not lowering rates. He announced that he's keeping the rates steady, which, of course, translates into calls of treasonous conspiracy on Powell's part. Now MAGA wants to arrest Powell for treason. Hey, Hody, do we all know what how inflation is calculated and what the numbers actually are?
Yeah, it seems to me that if you're going to pass an Econ 101 class or, you know, claim that you graduated from Wharton, you probably would know that information, you know. So yes, we do know how that is calculated.
Right. And because we know what's calculated, I want to put up something on the screen right now just as an illustration, Hody. And here we see what looks like a lot of nerd stuff, but bear with me for a second. The blue line is inflation, as reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. As you could tell, this is for this year. We started the – now, remember, in every month that you see this data point, Hody, it represents through the previous month, right? Because it takes a month for the numbers to be calculated. So you could see that right around the time we had deflation a little bit, which was a good thing, coming off all the spending that the Biden administration did. There was, you know, we hadn't passed the big, beautiful bill yet. We still had some of Biden spending, as Trump was often reminding us. However, we had decline in prices. When you look at the CPI, though, when you start with the 10% tariff and the de minimis exception coming to an end in February, what does that mean? China was hit with an extra 10% tariff, and de minimis exception meant when you and I ordered something through Amazon that originated in China, if it was less than $1,000, it was not subject to tariffs. Getting rid of that exemption means they were then subject to tariffs. The next number came in at 2.4, which again, below, that's not bad. But now we see the 25% tariffs with Canada and Mexico were added. Another 10% on China. That happened in March. We kind of had a bit of a plateau here. But now, because it takes 2 to 3 months for inflationary practices to pressures to build up, we start seeing 2.3 to 2.4 to 2.7. The 2.7 that was announced in June represented everything through May. The July number will come out next week, probably. We're sitting at 2.7. Now, the Trump administration will tell you that 2.7 is actually a reduction from 2.4. And borrowing a page from their Democrat friends across the aisle when it comes to spending, the Trump administration says there was a decrease in inflation because it wasn't as high of an increase as other people were expecting. So, a 1/8 increase from 2.4 to 2.7, which of course is 12.5%, seems to be a reason to cheer in the Trump administration. In purple at the bottom, Hody, I have some very special events that are on the horizon. In this month, we saw steel and aluminum tariffs set to 50% on everything except steel originating from the UK. On August 1st, all the other Trump tariffs, like the 50% tariffs on Brazil, because they are making the horrible economic mistake of prosecuting their former criminal president. President Trump has slapped a 50% tariff on them for that economic offense. I didn't realize doing that was an economic offense to the U.S. But something else, Hody, that there seems to be a little finagling around. Have you ever heard, Hody, of a CPI imputation? Do you know what that is?
Yeah, so the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is what you pay for stuff. So the imputation is when we input, literally just say, oh, when we calculate this number, when we say, what is the approximate price of rent? That's the imputation, with that approximate price of the rent.
Right. They're actually estimates. You're right. They're estimates. And it's in lieu of real data. So when the labor the Bureau of Labor Statistics can't get its hands on actual data, they kind of guesstimate it. Typically speaking, it's not uncommon for the Bureau of Labor Statistics to roughly use that 10% of their CPI calculations, roughly, over the years, have been guesstimates. That's because, they don't have all the numbers on time, or they're hard to get because of COVID or something. So it's been in that 5 to 10% range. Well, beginning in May 2025, the Bureau of Labor Statistics announced that due to a shortage caused by layoffs, meaning DOGE cuts, the amount of imputation they had to do was much higher. They wouldn't tell us the percentage, but it was much higher. If you believe what you read on X, that number is somewhere around 35% now. So the allegation is that it went from 10 to 35. I stress allegation because there's no hard numbers that were announced, just that there was an increase in the amount of imputation. So, Hody, not only is the Trump administration being a little disingenuous when they say inflation really hasn't gone up, it has gone up, and it's gone up despite the fact that Trump administration officials are now guesstimating at the increases. Meaning, why wouldn't they just cook the numbers to make themselves look a little better there? Or do you think they actually have?
Yeah, they probably have. Now listen, the Consumer Price Index is something, as you mentioned, about 10% usually gets estimated. But those are with strong, like, we can't, you know, there's too much rent information to go literally to every single apartment building,
right,
get their approximate price of rent, see how many people are paying those pieces of rent. And so understandably, you would estimate quite a bit. So there's actually a lot of reports on this that not only are they straight up estimating without any visitation 35%, but they are estimating with minimal visitation about 50% of this data. And it's a big deal because, as you and I know, gross domestic product horrifically, very rare, but horrifically actually went down this last month. That is something that, to describe, basically the average American household had to sell more stuff than they brought in, right? Yeah. In a month. That almost never happens, even when, like, in dire economic times.
It means the country's productivity decreased. We as a nation, we produced less than we did the month before.
Well, and to be more accurate, it's our domestic product. Not only what we're producing is less, but what the I think that I like using gross domestic product because it's what the average person has. How much do you have? Right? Like, how much do you have? It's that's what really measures our wealth, right? Ultimately, if I have $0 in the bank, but I have everything I could ever want, you know, like the $0 in the bank doesn't really mean anything to me, you know, like, and so this is something we measure. Oh, what did the stock market do? Well, the stock market always goes up when inflation's up. So that's not really a great measurement. This is actually a really good measurement, and messing with it is really bad because then we're saying, oh, I'm sure people aren't paying that much for these services and products and everything that they're getting. By manipulating this data, now, again, this is, as you mentioned, an accusation. I don't know that they're manipulating all the data, but here's the issue. They are so consistently getting about 90% on this, you know, of knowing exactly what this number is, that when they do get something that is not, that is out of the norm, the assumption is that something odd has happened. The last time we got this low, COVID was happening and people couldn't visit, right?
Right.
That makes sense. Oh, you had COVID. Okay. Yeah. Consumers understand COVID. We know what happened. You couldn't quite get to all the places because of COVID. This has been an increase from 10% to 35% or 50% since January. And there's no excuse for us not to collect the same data. They're saying it's Doge, but reports this week are actually that Doge ended up canning a bunch of people that were already themselves canned, that were already on administrative leave. In fact, I think the report is they wasted about $21 billion being like, hey, if you quit your job, we'll pay you, of people that had already been either – some of them even fired, laid off, or already quit.
Right. Right.
So this was a huge mistake, and it is not explained by these Doge cuts. It's something else. Now, what is that something else? Now, you and I are putting together a conspiracy maybe?
Sure.
But it's a conspiracy that makes a lot of sense.
Well,
there's no other reason not to collect this data.
Well, see, that's the thing, right? So, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because I promised everyone here I'd try to keep it to an hour today. So, to wrap it up, the reason it's less of a conspiracy is because everything points to tariffs being a failure. History. Classical economists. Economists that under any other circumstance, Republicans would be praising. We're talking about Adam Smith, Milton Friedman, Thomas Sowell, who's still alive and says tariffs are a bad idea. Hayek, Rothbard, if you're a libertarian, right? Mises, all these guys said tariffs are horrible. They are what you do during wartime. You don't do it during peacetime. And the United States being the biggest economy in the world by far, you know, don't buy into the Republican messaging that our economy was circling the drain. It wasn't. The next closest economy is China. We're at least twice as big as China. So that's not the issue, right? This is an issue of Western hegemony. They want the West to rule again, and they're doing it economically right now. And smaller nations have to capitulate. Japan, Korea, the Philippines, all these so-called wins, small nations that have no choice but to capitulate to Trump's nonsense. So it's the opposite. When the claims are made that tariffs have zero effect on inflation, that they're actually deflationary, that's the conspiracy theory because it flies in the face of everything we know about economics. It's not a matter of if tariffs will cause inflation. It's just a matter of when and how much. So keep that in mind when you look at this stuff, Hody. I think that's the main thing. All right. Whew. Ranted a little bit on that one, Hody. I'm sorry if I got a little bit excited there.
Great. You know, I dig it. I love the economic talk.
But I love the economic talk. We're nerds here at heart. All right, everyone. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. Hopefully you had a good time listening to us. Maybe you learned something. Hopefully. I don't know. Fingers crossed. But anyway, join us again next Thursday for another episode of Free for All, your home for libertarian talk. Right here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com, where you can check us out on Rumble, Facebook, YouTube, X, all under the handle at Grumblings Media, all one word, at Grumblings Media. I'm always blessed and happy to have my friend Hody Johns, my co-host here. We'll be back again next Thursday. Until then, this has been Big John. Peace, everyone.